If I rule the world.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Queen Series podcast, proudly sponsored by the Black Business and Professionals Association and presented by Melanin Queens Organics. I'm excited. I have a very special guest in the building. I have Nichelle Bartley. She is the CEO and founder of Money Basics, and we're going to be talking all about money, one of my favorite things to talk about. Nichelle, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So I love to talk about money. I actually do a little bit of day trading.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of my things. I'm not good at numbers because I'm dyslexic.
Okay.
But I really love like currency and understanding the market and, you know, the peaks and the dips and all these things. But as we know, financial literacy is not very prominent in the community, right? And so one of your missions is to help people be more financially literate and understand their money and how to make it work best for them. Is that correct?
Yes. Like, one of my missions is I don't want to hear people say they're not good with money.
Ah.
I think that it's not a good thing when I hear that, because when I see that so many people have all these dreams, these vision boards and all these things.
Yeah.
It all costs money at the end of the day.
So you
got to be good with your money, and you have to understand what you need your money to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing that I noticed too, that people think that, you know, being financially secure is just about having investments, and that's just one pillar of the whole picture. A lot of the work that I do really stems on the foundational work, which is more on mindset. And really understanding what do you need to be doing strategically with your cash flow, and also looking at how do you actually earn your money? Are you leaving money on the table? Are you not asking for enough? Are you not paying attention to what's coming in and what's going out? Because at the end of the day, we all talk about building generational wealth. But the key thing to building any kind of wealth is that you need capital. Mm. And most of us, in order to have capital, your source of capital is your income.
Mm.
And then you could take that income, invest it, do other things, and it multiplies.
Right.
But if you're not paying attention to the income that's coming in and doing the right things with it, you won't have the capital to build that generational wealth.
Yeah, that's a fact. So let's talk, before we jump into the different pillars, like you mentioned, let's talk a little bit about how you got interested in finance and money and helping people.
Sure. So my background, I went to school for finance. I worked within the financial industry for well over 15 years.
Wow. Then,
yeah.
Ah!
Yes.
Long time.
I started as a financial advisor, investment advisor. I worked my way through managing mutual funds and doing the accounting side of those things, then transitioned into project management. So I've always kind of been the person where people would always come to me asking for advice on things money related. I've always been an organized person with my money. But at the same time, I've fallen into traps just like everybody else, where I didn't make the best choices for my money, disrespecting my money, doing things that isn't going to get me to what I say I wanted to. So for me, what creating Money Basics was about is really, especially with women, because the relationship with money between women and men are very different. And my main thing was to really help women to understand what they need to be doing with their money, and just really understanding like how they're thinking about it. So many people would come to me and say, yeah, I'm just not good with money and I did bad and whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, that's the past. Let's figure out the path to what you want your future to be.
Right.
And when you start to see that you're in control of those things, and it's just about the mindset shifts that you need to have. I mean, you may make a decision to change your money situation today, but it's not going to materialize in 24 hours. So it's all those steps. It's the strategic decisioning and action steps that you need to take in order to transform your relationship with your money and transform the results that you want to see with your money as well.
Yeah. So do you find that women more so than men associate money and have like negative self-talk or negative talk around this idea of money? Or is it more so of when they do make a mistake, then they beat themselves up about, now I can't have a better relationship with money because in the past it's been so bad?
Well, I am not saying that men are perfect and they're all good with their money. It's just the way that a lot of us were raised around money.
Yeah, so cultural implications, yes. And just like a lot of things. And it could go back to like, again, the community, right? Mm-hmm. And how we deal and understand, yes, money. Yeah.
Like, for instance, I had a conversation with someone the other day, and she was explaining to me how when she grew up, she was the only girl and she had like four brothers. Mm-hmm. And the father was an entrepreneurial person. He had businesses and whatever. And she said that I didn't learn how to manage my money until probably I was like 40.
Wow. She's like, 40 years old.
Because like the way how she was raised is like, yeah, the father taught the brothers how to do this and talk about money. She was just kind of just told to do these things and she did whatever. She got married. The husband took care of it. And I mean, she made good money and whatnot, but it's just not something that she connected herself with. Mm. And then, you know, I think she ended up getting divorced. So it's at that point she realized like, oh, I need to start paying attention to these things because now I'm on my own.
Right.
Right. So when you're it all depends on how what your relationship is, what your circumstances have been, and really challenging those beliefs that you have.
Right. And that resonates with me because growing up, my mom, I grew up in a single mother household. Mm-hmm. So I understood that my mom was the primary breadwinner.
Right.
Right. But then at the same time, we always just barely made it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then my mom always talked about this idea of survival. She was always, yes, in like this survival mode.
Yes.
And so that reinforced from a young age this mindset of scarcity, mm-hmm, and not operating necessarily in abundance,
yes,
but that there's not enough, mm-hmm, and that, you know, if you spend it, then it'll come back, but you don't know when. Or so it perpetuated this idea that kind of I had to unlearn, mm-hmm, in my adulthood and realize that if I want to live any quality of life, it doesn't have to be rooted, despite cultural implications, in this idea of scarcity.
Exactly. And it is not just within our community that has it. Everybody has it. Everybody. It just manifests itself in different ways. Mm-hmm. And that lack mentality, especially if you're not used to having, and I'm putting my fingers in quotation marks here, abundance, yeah, you feel that, okay, I need to hold on to it.
Yes.
And the thing with that is when you have that mentality of just surviving and holding on to, because you're not believing or not trusting that you will be supplied for, mm-hmm, in the future.
Wow.
So you're holding on to that and you're just trying to do whatever you can, you know, like the squirrel gathering all the nuts,
right,
for the winter. And you're like, I don't want to let go of not one of them because I don't know what my winter is going to be
exactly,
like.
Exactly, yeah.
And all those things, like you said, it's learned behavior.
Learned and perpetuated, you know, generationally,
yes,
really. Yeah.
Yes, and that's learned behavior. And the challenge that most of us have, it's not because you may not make a certain amount of money, is how do I think about me making a certain amount of money? We may say, mm-hmm, we want to, but then you realize the things that you need to overcome in order to get there.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it's very easy to make a lot of money, but they don't keep it at the same time. Mm. And whenever you see those patterns, it's usually mindset related. And when you dig deep, wow, it goes back to something childhood. It goes back to something that we've seen growing up or how we associate with people.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really interesting because, you know, a lot of the times we think in our minds, if I had somebody to handle my money for me, then I would make better decisions. But it's more than that.
It's more than that.
Because you have to really figure out what the root of the problem is so that you can actually change your behaviors. You can't just hand it off to somebody else,
yes,
and tell them, okay, fix it for me.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, in the work that I do, mm-hmm, one of my mantras is you need to be the CEO of your money. Just the same way you're the CEO of your life. You have all these dreams, goals, aspirations. If you want to use the analogy of looking at a CEO of a company, mm-hmm, the CEO doesn't do everything, but he or she is the person who comes out and says, okay, this is what I need to do. This is what we are going to do. Mm-hmm. This is how I need to get it done. You bring the people around the table to help you and advise you on how you could go about doing that. But you are the one who's responsible for casting that vision, determining what that is, and you bring the right people around in order to help you birth that vision, bring it to life, whatever the case is. So this is why it's necessary for you to know what's going on with your money.
Mm-hmm.
And I always advise people, yes, yeah, it would be nice. I don't want to look at it. You just handle it.
Right.
But we've seen all those stories, celebrities, so on and so forth, mm-hmm. and they end up with nothing. I mean, that happened to Rihanna.
Did it really happen to Rihanna?
It happened to her earlier in her career.
Really? Yes. Or she just misutilized
She had trust money? People had, she had hired people to handle her money. She wasn't and on top of it. And they were double dipping? Yeah.
Ah, whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes.
Rihanna's an interesting case, though, because mm-hmm. I find now that she's kind of like shifted. And so
she learned.
She learned real quick.
She learned. She's like, learned.
Yeah, now she's in a better in terms of like different income streams mm-hmm. and dipping into different industries because she's now can sell anything because yes, she's Rihanna, right?
Exactly.
So, wow, really interesting.
So it's not that I never advise people to say you need to be like a CPA level, an accountant,
yeah,
about your money, but you need to know what's happening with it because mm-hmm. it's not the big things really. It's all these small patterns that you have that derail everything.
Wow.
That's what it is.
What are one of the biggest, what's one of the biggest things that you see in your clients, like that have ultimately led to their like downfall or their, you know, misguidance with their money?
One, not setting a vision for what they want and mm-hmm. understanding what's required of it. I'm not saying you need to have all the answers, but having understanding what type of money you're going to require to be able to have it, number yeah. one. Number two, not checking in with your money, not paying attention to it, avoiding it. Like, I know I have this, I have that, but they don't know what's going on with it.
Yeah.
They spend feverishly and you don't have a budget.
No budget. To prepare for this interview, I actually watched a Canadian couple who intends to retire at 35 mm-hmm. and their method for doing so is to be really frugal right mm-hmm. now. So they only take like 2 trips a year. They only go to like these tiny markets to buy their fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. They buy the basics for their food so that mm-hmm. it's super cheap, like a thing of flour, a thing of rice, whatever.
Right.
And the rest, I think it's, they live on 40% of their salary, and their salary isn't a lot. Mm-hmm. And then the rest are in index funds and different things like
yes.
that. So it's now gaining interest, and that's, they intend over time to, at some point mm-hmm. when they retire, to use that money so they don't have to work anymore.
Right. And you know what? There's so many different variations of that and yeah, so many different arguments.
Yeah.
Whether you want to be really frugal, whether you want to be extravagant. At the end of the day, like if you're using that couple as an example, they set a standard and a vision for themselves and they've committed to saying, wow, this is what our lifestyle will be in order for me to have this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And as soon as you're able to commit to that, then you know what those steps are that you need to take.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it's very clear what they need to do. Now, I wouldn't necessarily do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not necessarily do that. But whatever that vision is for you, you have to figure out what are you willing to do in order to have it.
Do you mean that you don't necessarily have to like sacrifice the really nice things in order to, in the long term, save and have that? Can you balance a lifestyle of like the finer mm-hmm. things and also hold on to your money?
Of course you can.
Yeah.
Of course you can. I think it comes down to understanding what you could afford, because your money will only go so far. And what's really happening nowadays is that difference that you're talking about, the nice lifestyle, is being funded by debt. Now, I'm not of the proponent that's to say that all debt is bad.
That's what I was going
to
say, yeah.
That's not, I don't believe that.
No.
What
no.
I know is that if you are using debt, you should be using debt to increase.
Mm-hmm.
Not increase in consumption, but increase in the ability to either gain skills, turn a profit on something.
Right.
Borrowing people's money to make more money. It's about making more money. That's what you leverage debt for. But what we've seen in the Western world is that debt is more or less being used for consumption. So we're not using it to turn a profit, to make more money. It's more about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why a lot of people have issues with managing their cash flow and being, and as well as your mindset that comes into it as to what leads you to that as well.
Yeah.
So the lack of financial literacy, the mindset, buried deep inside of how you feel about your money.
Yeah.
And then the societal pressures.
Exactly. Because that's really hard to combat, to societal pressures specifically, mm-hmm. because it's like we live in an age of consumerism.
Yes.
It's like they want you to buy more stuff. Just industries and companies want mm-hmm. you to buy more. There's this concept of the impulse buying yep. also, and just like buying to make yourself feel good. It's almost like reinforcing like these bad habits mm-hmm. that are just going to put you in a worse off situation.
Yes.
Like if I have a car, for example, I I've created a habit. My mom taught me this to never buy cars, lease cars. Mm-hmm. So I always buy cars cash. So mm-hmm. right now I have a Jeep. And I bought a Jeep because, a Jeep Wrangler, because mm-hmm. they're one of the only cars that don't depreciate much in value. So if I'm going to have something, mm-hmm. just a car, I don't mm-hmm. know, I'm not going to call car names, but
right.
if you drive it off the lot, then it depreciates in yes. value, right?
All cars depreciate.
Almost immediately. So you mm-hmm. almost spend more money in the long run with interest and stuff on the car than mm-hmm. the car is actually worth.
Yes.
So just like for me, thinking about things like that, like why would I buy a car if it's not... Like, if it's just going to depreciate, and then I'm going to have a car payment, and then it's going to be too much, and mm-hmm. then, you know, I'm not going to be able to manage that.
Right.
So just having these kinds of thoughts. But let whoever an advertisement tell you it's the best, you have to buy this particular car, it's the best thing for you, it's awesome, you know?
Exactly.
The latest iPhone, the mm-hmm. one you have is fine, but you have to buy this specific one because it could tell you when your birthday is, you can look at your eye color, you know, it can tell
it's
you
no what different yeah, than the one you have exactly. It's just like one or two additional features and you're going to spend a hell of a lot more money
right.
on it.
Like it'll tell you what the gender of your baby is, like mm-hmm. it, you know, so it's so hard, it's, especially in terms of like this mindset, trying to think about, okay, I need to be smarter with my money, but oh my gosh, look at this shiny thing and TV says I should have yep. it, you know.
Yeah. and that's where I always say, this is why it's important for us to know what we want. Because if you yeah, don't know what you want, you're going to get distracted with everything
that's
else.
That's right. And you don't have discipline also, right? Right? Yeah.
So, again, back to the example of what you were telling about the couple.
Yeah.
They're just as much as susceptible to all the consumerism and all the advertising mm. and all the marketing that's coming at them. Mm-hmm. But it's a decision.
It's a decision.
And you have to walk out that decision with action.
Right.
Specific actions that you know that will get you to whatever the end goal is. Many of us are walking around with no specific goals on what we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. So hence your money's going all over the place.
Right.
And all of us, I don't care who you are, all of us,
everybody
has their own way when they get stressed or they can't deal with something. They find something to either escape from it or whatnot,
mm-hmm.
whether it's food, whether it's shopping,
yeah, drugs,
whether it's drugs, whether yeah, it's alcohol. Whether true. It's just going to sleep. It varies for everybody else, but at the end of the day, there's a paper trail with your money that impacts that as well.
Yeah.
Right? And we're all emotional beings and we all have feelings. And it's not about saying everybody needs to be perfect with their feelings because there's no such thing. Mm-hmm. But it's being aware of what your triggers are. Mm-hmm. And you know that if certain things happen, I'm more liable to go to the mall and start shopping unconsciously almost. And it's not about stopping it right away. It's about being aware of what's happening, eventually weaning yourself off of that, replacing that behavior with something else.
Yeah. So in your line of work, how do you bring someone to realize some of their habits and patterns and then help them kind of change that mindset?
Well, a lot of it comes down to tracking.
Yeah.
So it's about the habits and paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking from a dollars and cents perspective, when I work with somebody, I'm going to look at where they're currently positioned from a net worth perspective. And then also what's happening with your cash flow. So if you say to me, you want to be able to do this, and I look at your cash flow patterns, how much money you're earning, how are you spending it, how are you saving it, how are you investing it, and how are you giving it away? Then we got to look at, okay, is that in alignment with where you say you need to go? So if we say this is where your budget or your money plan comes in, because that is going to be able to show you, okay, this is what you need to be doing on a week-to-week basis in order to help you to get to wherever it is that you say that you want to go, mm-hmm. with your money, at least. And if you're noticing that that's not what's happening, let's say you come in with a certain amount of debt and we know we want to get rid of the debt by a certain time, but it's going in the opposite, it's going right back up.
Right.
Well, we know that there's something there.
Yeah.
We're not talking about emergencies and things like that come up. It's the patterns and seeing what you're doing and watching week to week. Well, how did things go? Did we stay on budget? If not, when you didn't, what was the emotions that you were experiencing at that time? What was happening?
Yeah.
Because that's what you got to pay attention to, because it's like sometimes we're unconscious about what those things are. It's just something you keep doing.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you bring awareness to it, it's about saying, okay, well, I acknowledge it, not to beat yourself up over it, but okay, what can I replace this with? Mm-hmm. Instead of doing this, is there something else that I can do?
Yeah. Wow, that, and that, you know what? That process takes a lot of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And I assume that if somebody comes to you with help, they've already admitted that they need it, right?
Most times, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's really difficult to try to change and help somebody that is not receptive and open to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because much like my experience is like my mom, I couldn't tell her, Mom, maybe if you structured your money this way, and all she's thinking is in survival mode.
Yes.
And I'm also her kid, so she really doesn't want to listen to me. So. Exactly. That's it. She doesn't want to listen to what I have to say. But yeah, so the process is then, you know, hey, I have these goals and these visions or these dreams, and the way I'm thinking about my money isn't getting me there. So let me call Nichelle and, you know, see how I can fix it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not usually most people per se, but it's usually more people find me or work with me because it just, I'm able to talk about the things that they're able to pick up on. Right. And a lot of the customers that I work with are on the entrepreneurial side.
Oh, wow.
So you get faced more with a lot of your money issues being your own boss than you do working for somebody else.
For because sure.
That paycheck is coming every 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, you can count on it.
And you know, if
there.
You have a pension and you have a this and a that, and you're like, okay, cool, I made it, I'm all right. But even for the 9-to-5-er, they still run into these traps of thinking that, okay, well, I just have this, I make good money.
Mm-hmm.
So
you hear that often. I make good money.
I was speaking with a friend the other day, and he was saying to me how he recently got his pay increase. So I said, he's like, yeah, it was just like a 2% pay increase, which is common.
Mm-hmm.
Most pay increases range anywhere from 1-5%
annually. Oh wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say the person was making $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
And his pay increase was 2%. So he only made it an extra, he's gonna only make an extra $2,000 in the next coming year off of that money. Mm-hmm. And then he was saying like the bonus was like minuscule, it was like less than $1,000. So I was like, I said to him, I said, you need to start thinking about getting a new job. He's like, but I make good money.
Wow.
I'm like, I said, let me break it down for you.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is in actuality, you're actually making less money.
Ooh, yeah.
How? I said, inflation.
Oh.
Because your buying power is going down because exactly. your income is not substantially increasing beyond that.
Right.
So many of us are walking around saying, I make good money. But when you really break down the numbers, actually you're not.
No way.
Because, and what I mean by that is, so you can be making $100,000,
sure.
but by the time you get tax and whatever taken out
it's
of that,
100K,
you're
yeah.
probably taking home 60.
Exactly.
But by the time you pay your housing expenses, this and that, it's that cash flow that you're looking at. And mm-hmm. then after the bills are paid, what do you have left?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have all that extra cash flow, this is where debt comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's where people substitute what they need with debt. Mm. So this is why I say, you may think you're making good money, but if your money is not allowing you to pay for everything that you want and you need
mm-hmm.
and set you up for your future, you're not.
Wow, harsh reality. Because as soon as somebody says six figures, that's what they think, right?
Yes.
I'm making six figures. I don't have to worry about anything.
No.
And that's just the misconception.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, people think, when they get a job, like, okay, I'm getting this job and I have enough money to pay the bills, but they don't even consider things like inflation on an
yes.
annual basis or anything like that.
Because when you really look at the numbers and you're like, if you stay in a role for the next 3 years, because that's about the average time people stay in a role, and you look at how you come into a job, say, negotiate $100,000, and over three, and let's say you keep getting 2% raises because of whatever the situation is, you're only going to make an extra almost $7,500 over 3 years.
Over 3 years.
But inflation keeps going up.
Yeah.
And your lifestyle, you probably want other things.
Exactly. Yeah. As it increases too.
Yeah.
These are things that we don't consider at all.
And this is why you, even though now, entrepreneurship is not for everybody, so this is why you have to manage your career
yeah
accordingly, and And this is where the money mindset comes in. Like, you're believing, I make good money, but what the reality is, it's not getting you to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. So then a lot of the hurdles that people have to go through is unwinding that belief that they're making good money.
Mm. Whoa. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot about, like, okay, so you have to then come to the reality of the misconception that even though the paper says 100K, I might be getting swindled. And it might not be working for me despite the 100K that I see. Yeah. So if you tell yourself, I'm making good money, I'm making good money, I'm making good money, of course you're going to believe that you're making good money. So if somebody like you comes in and says you're not, for them it's going to be like, what do you mean I'm not? Of course I am.
And what I mean by that is, and if you want to switch it up,
yeah,
is that income getting you to what you need it to be for what you tell me you want in the future and right now? Because what you were asking me earlier, it's like, well, do I need to sacrifice order to have? And a lot of us believe it's like, okay, we need to save this money for retirement. And I'm saying it's not just about retirement. What do you, so you're going to wait until you're 65 60, or whatever, and you can't do anything until then? No, you want to live your life. You want to travel. You want to do this. You want to wear this. Nothing wrong with that. I always say, make sure you have the cash flow to do it without debt cash flow. Find a way through your own income or your own revenue sources or income sources to be able to fund that on your own.
Yeah.
And then if you are going to use debt, use it to make more money.
Use it like in real estate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I don't want to go off on a tangent on the Toronto real estate. But ever since I've been here, I realized that the real estate market is bananas. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, since you're in finance, you can understand it a little bit better. But for me, it's like $1 million, say, in like in some parts of Florida now, because Miami's pretty crazy.
Yes.
It's not this crazy, but it's pretty crazy. But when you say $1 million home, I'm talking like on sprawling. The beach. I'm talking, it maybe comes with a couple jet skis, a boat, you know? So what is it about the market here that has it? But I mean, I kind of have a guess, and that's like, just the foreign buying power that's coming in. And
there's a lot of that going on that's pushed. It's supply and demand,
right?
Mainly.
But how can people afford to live? I read a stat that said that over 50% of people that had pulled out these mortgages with higher interest rates are now refinancing their homes to use that to pay off their debt.
Yeah.
How is it work? How can that sustain?
We'll see.
Like, what?
So, I mean, if you look at what's happened with the real estate market in Toronto over the last, I want to say 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Prior to the market meltdown in 2008.
Yeah.
Prices within the 416 were still relatively affordable.
Relatively, yeah.
Relatively affordable. The 905 was generally always more cheaper. Okay? And so a lot of people were getting into, especially in the condo market, they were buying a lot of condos, buying a lot of homes, so on and so forth. And when the market came, when the market crashed, a lot of things had happened. I remember I was living on a street where prior to the market crashing, townhomes on that street, because it was in Toronto, was selling for almost $1 million.
That was before.
Just before.
Wow.
The market melted. And after, like in late 2008, 2009, those same homes were selling for just under
$700,000.
So it was just a contraction of the available credit, the available people moving money around. That's really what happened during the market meltdown. But what also was a really great push to send people into getting into buying real estate is because interest rates were insanely low.
Low, yeah.
I mean, they're still low, but not as low as it was then.
Mm-hmm.
So before, where, for instance, I've heard in the 80s, interest rates were like 19, 20, 21%. So if you have an interest rate where it's like 2%, 3%, many people were able to qualify. And mortgage rules were different at that point. They're a lot more stricter now.
Right.
Many people are getting into it. But what I am calling out here is many people were going into mortgages where it would basically be all you're doing is working to pay for your mortgage.
Yes, exactly.
So any shift that happened within their income stability
Done. Yeah.
So many people are going into getting mortgages, buying houses, but they don't have reserves for if something happens. Mm-hmm. So this is where you see where when the market shifted and things are going back up, a lot of foreign investment has come into Toronto. So mm-hmm. I feel like Toronto's becoming a Manhattan.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
So what you're noticing now is even from the Toronto 416 area code and the 905 area code, the prices are not that much different.
Exactly. They're not. So it's like pick your poison.
Yes.
Do you want $1 million house in way up in mm-hmm. what, Richmond Hill? Or do mm-hmm. you want it in the core?
Yes.
What's the difference?
I mean, the core tends to be still more the more expensive area.
Yeah.
Right? But you're even noticing, like before, it wasn't common to see like $2-4 million homes in the 905. That's common. That's commonplace now.
Right.
So it's completely different. So the market has definitely shifted and it's definitely locking a lot of people out of the availability to own a home.
Yeah. And then the rental market is also having a problem too, right? Because sure, you can have foreign folks buying up condos and mm-hmm. but when they go to rent it out now based mm-hmm. on those prices the average person that lives here in the city mm-hmm. cannot afford it.
Because I was seeing a stat the other day, the average one bedroom apartment in Toronto right now is around $2,200 or $2,300 a month.
One bedroom.
So and it's not like a regular size one bedroom.
No. Maybe
it's a matchbox.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because that's what they're building. So my question is, how is it like when you get a job, say you're in the corporate world or whatever, and because your cost of living has to match that in order for you to like live, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like it has to be affordable. But what I'm also noticing is that the job markets aren't really compensating for how expensive it is to live.
Nope.
So that's a problem.
But this is where you're seeing there's a lot, the whole roommate
situation
has exploded. Mm-hmm. There's so many places where it's a roommate situation that's happening. It's not like you're a grown adult and you're living on your own. You have a roommate or two or whatever.
Yeah, you're living in a shared space.
Yes.
That shouldn't be the solution. You know what I mean?
But that's the reality.
Because it's like, even in New York, the wages in some places are higher because, of course, you know, I need to be able to afford to live. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So cool. But here it's like, no, I'm still going to pay you a lot less despite mm-hmm. you'll just have to live with someone and cram into this one bedroom, maybe three people.
But this is the thing. The wages are not catching up with the reality of what expenses are out there.
Yeah, that's problematic.
That's an issue. And it's not just here. It's happening across the world.
Yeah, everywhere.
In especially in a lot of main metropolitan cities, that is a problem.
Yeah.
So this is where you really have to start thinking strategically different and really different about your money. And like, mm-hmm. where can I utilize my gifts, my talents to be able to command more money? Mm-hmm. And also you need to be able to believe in your ability and know how to negotiate more income, more revenue, more whatever it is, mm-hmm. depending on what side of the fence you're sitting on, whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you are a regular 9-to-5er, mm-hmm. how are you going to negotiate and plan for you to be able to keep, not just keep up with inflation, surpass it,
yeah. Let's talk about the art of negotiation then, mm-hmm. or asking, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole belief around that too. Like you have to be able to be confident enough to even ask.
Yes.
And a lot of people, a lot of women, stats show that they don't go in and negotiate when it comes to their salary.
Like I gave you an example today. I was speaking to a friend today and she was looking at a job posting and she was like, well, they're asking for this university degree and I don't have it. I'm like, and?
So what? Yeah.
And? Uh-huh. And I said to her, I'm sorry, but you know, and you know this because she knows this too. I'm like, if this was a man, they're not going to sit there and they don't care.
They barely read it.
And they're going to apply.
Yeah.
So why are you sitting here? Mm. I don't have this, so I'm not going to. You're eliminating yourself.
Wow. You don't even give yourself a chance.
And it's something as simple as that.
Yeah.
Now, that could be whatever it is. That could be, you know, a job that could pay her substantially more money.
Exactly.
But you're thinking because it says I need this, and I don't have this specifically, that I disqualify myself. Mm. And a lot of what when it comes to negotiation, it's two pieces. Mindset is a big thing, mm-hmm. and there's a technicality of it all. Mm-hmm. So the technicality is about knowing your numbers. Where are you currently positioned? And is the salary that you're making good enough for you? And it's not just like, you know what, they're not paying me enough and I should be making more, but what is that more for you?
Right.
What does more mean for you?
Yeah.
And if it is that you say that you want more, how do you validate that you can deliver on that more?
Right.
So this is where we have to take inventory of what we bring to the table. We have to be able to promote ourselves. We have to be able to know what value we bring to the table so that when someone wants to lowball you, but they no.
Yeah.
That won't work for me.
Very confidently.
Yes.
Sure of yourself.
Yes. Because you know the numbers around and you know you have an idea of what is the going rate for these roles or whatever.
Right.
And it's not even just in the working for somebody scenario. Very much when you're an entrepreneur too.
Absolutely.
And how you price yourself and how you package whatever it is that you offer. Mm-hmm. You have to know. Now, if you're service-based, you need to know what numbers go into that. You also need to know what you need to leave behind for your business, how much profit you need to get out of it, mm-hmm. and how much you need to pay yourself.
Right.
So, but again, all of this hinges on what you believe and how you look at money, mm-hmm. and what you know that your money needs to do for you. So the more you start to know, okay, I need my money to do this, and someone's asking you for a discount, it's up to you to decide if you want to give them the discount, because you will know how it's going to impact your numbers down the road.
Mm-hmm. You know what? And a lot of times we associate, like, for example, the discount thing. It's mm-hmm. Like, oh, if I don't give this person that I love a discount on my products, then it's going to cause like a personal mm-hmm, rate or something, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's also like the ability to separate the personal
yes.
from like, this is my livelihood yes. and my job and I can't afford mm-hmm. to give you this discount.
And it's more or less, okay, if you decide to give a discount, please know that you're deciding because you know what your numbers are.
Yeah.
As opposed to not knowing else. What's happening, and then it comes the end of the month, and you're just like, "Well, I'm not even making bank off of what I'm making." So
because you were giving these discounts all yes. willy nilly, because they're my friends, they're my family, they asked. Because
it's not a problem with giving,
right?
Like, that's a pillar of your money too. If you choose to give, whether it's in a discount or give something away, you're quite entitled to do that, and you should.
Yeah.
But you need to know what your boundaries are around that.
Right.
If it is that you're giving away discounts and it's going to hurt you, and mm-hmm. it's going to hurt your business, it's going to hurt what you being able to pay yourself, then you have to draw the brakes on that. Mm-hmm. So this is why I say you got to know your numbers.
Yeah.
It's important you know your numbers and know what's going on with your business. So that way you are empowering yourself to make that decision. You don't have to feel guilty about it.
So it's just so amazing that even in terms of like money and finances, a mm-hmm. lot of it boils down to self-awareness,
yes.
you know, consciousness, a lot of boundary setting, mm-hmm. unlearning. So these are all concepts that we've talked about on the Queen Series podcast. Yes. And it's just like, at the end of the day, what I'm hearing is that money, much like your relationship with people, your relationship with anything that you do in life, requires some reflection.
Yes, of course.
Oh.
Of course.
And if we can continue to think about money in those terms, it'll take away a lot of the this idea of literacy. Like, we have to be literate when it comes to our money. But I think you've broken it down in a way that it explains what exactly financial literacy mm-hmm. means. It's not picking up a textbook and reading all about accounting and numbers. It's just knowing yourself. And knowing yourself in relation to the money that you have.
Exactly. And I think it's not just, I personally don't like the term financial literacy.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more than that. It's yes, wellness.
Exactly.
Just wellness. Like how we need to know wellness for ourselves. Like, if you have a messed up relationship with your money, mm-hmm. just acknowledge it. You got to start somewhere. Mm. And then if you know that's not what you want, then we got to figure out what is it that you do want and start demonstrating those behaviors, mm-hmm. walking out those behaviors every day so that eventually that isn't the situation that you have anymore. Mm-hmm. And yes, and again, my fingers are in quotation marks here. The literacy part is around the technical piece.
Right. Yeah.
That's what people push. They talk about the technical side. Well, you should save this amount of money. You should do these things. But for what?
For what? Why?
And that looks different for me than it does for you.
Right.
So the only way that you can start to understand what that literacy part means for you is about understanding, what do I want out of my life? Mm. What am I working towards? Mm-hmm. Because everything you're working towards has a dollar sign attached to it, believe it or not.
Right.
Now, we will say, what do you mean by that? Experiences, or how I want to take care of my family, or I want to be present. You can't be present if you need to be working how many hours?
Ooh, a word.
Survival, right? You're in survival. I just need to do whatever. So yeah,
survival mode.
What do you need to do to change that?
Yeah.
So if it is that you need to upskill yourself and position yourself to be doing something different so that you can command more money, those are the steps that you need to talk about. Those are the steps that you need to take. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I believe they'll say that, you know, the biggest investment you ever make is like you're buying a home or whatever. I don't believe that. It should be in yourself. Mm. You need to invest in yourself. Mm-hmm. The more you invest in yourself is the more you're open to see different things, see different opportunity, and take different opportunities to another level. So that you could buy the house, you could buy the car, you could travel here, you could wear this, you could do that. You can give as much as you want to give.
Yeah.
You could spend as much as you want to spend. But you have to do the work.
You have to do that
work. And invest in yourself.
Yeah. And with your help, folks can get there. Nichelle with the word. Oh my gosh. I got my entire life. Nichelle, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So we've come to the end, and I wanted to ask if you have anything that you wanted to promote. Where can folks hit you up to get all of this financial knowledge, girl?
I mostly hang out on Instagram at Money Basics.
Yes.
And I have two calculators available. One for those who are the 9-to-5ers, and just so we were talking about that scenario about how much is your cash flow increasing.
Yeah.
I have a calculator for that.
Amazing.
And for my entrepreneurial friends, I know you all want to talk about how much money you want to take home at the end of the day, because you know what? You make $10,000 in the month, mm-hmm. you're not bringing home $10,000 because, mm-hmm. you know, tax man needs his portion, right? And your business needs its portion so you can actually grow it. But I have a calculator that allows you to see if you want to take home $10,000, for instance. What is the revenue you need to be making in order to bring to make that happen?
Wow. And where can we access those calculators?
Yeah. At moneybasics.ca, or you can find it on Instagram when you click the link in the bio.
Yes, Nichelle, thank you so much for coming on the Queen Series podcast.
Thank you so much.
I love this conversation. And if you liked it, rate us 5 stars on iTunes, like, subscribe, and share with all of your friends. Thank you so much for listening, and check out our blog at readthequeenseries.com. Bye bye.
Bye. I free all my sons. I love them, baby.